The premiere episode of Game of Thrones Season 8 is definitely one that has inspired a wide array of opinions in the fandom. All over the spectrum of hating it, loving it, being meh, and kinda everywhere in between. I figured what I would do today is talk about what I thought about the episode as well, and kinda throw my hat in that ring. Although those of you that caught my live stream right after the episode, or heard me on the Maester Monthly and the Estreadol Illusions podcast, probably have a good idea of what I'm about to say. A normal part of premiere episodes across all 8 seasons of Game of Thrones is that they often are the table-setting episodes for the entire season. They establish the major arcs and conflicts that'll be driving the rest of the season. In addition, because they often happen after long layoffs, there's a lot of exposition that has to catch up viewers who may need reminding of what happened at the end of the previous season, or characters that haven't showed up for quite some time. Although many of us who are deeply entrenched don't need these reminders and catch-ups, they can often feel unnecessary as we've spent most of the off-season talking over and over and over about the previous one. It's important to keep in mind what the goals of the filmmakers are with this episode, and if they achieve those alongside your own personal enjoyment of the content. Although you should take IMDb user ratings with a big spoonful of salt. Consistently from season to season, the premiere episodes of Game of Thrones rate near the bottom of their respective seasons. Structurally, these are the episodes where the least amount of new content is often found. The big surprises, the twists, the huge action sequences are saved for later in the season, like the White Heist of last season, the Red Wedding, the execution of Ned Stark, and on, all near the end of the season. As I said, these are largely table-setting episodes, and making sure all the audience is on the same page for where the ride is about to go. With that in mind, even among the premieres, this was a very different premiere. Written by Dave Hill, I would say it was one of the funnier episodes of the show. There were many small moments of humor, particularly between Tyrion, Varys, and Davos, who almost functioned as the classical idea of the Greek chorus, as they commented on what was happening around them, pointed out for the audience what was important, and had a few laughs. After a grim scene of Daenerys' armies marching through the Winter Town, lined with what may be the most unfriendly welcome I've ever seen, Varys and Tyrion tease each other almost as a way to break the tension of the moment. Sansa as well later comments when talking with Tyrion about how the Purple Wedding quote-unquote had its moments with a little smile on her face, as she is clearly remembering Joffrey choking to death. These kind of moments may be a response to criticisms of the previous season, where people thought the show had become largely too grim, with every character wearing black and gray and constant frowns on their faces. Humor is something Dave Hill is familiar with. For instance, he's credited as the writer on the episode Eastwatch, where we meet Gendry again, and we get the infamous fermented crab scene with Davos, and also the scene of Jon and Gendry teasing each other like Ned and Robert used to in the very first season. As a structural point in this episode, this honestly may be the last bit of levity we get for the entire season. Moving through the locations, I figured I would start with King's Landing. This had some of my least favorite parts of the episode, and really seemed like they were tying up loose ends for more interesting plots later. Theon finally rescues Yara from Euron, answering that question of where has she been, and in an echo back to Yara coming for Theon while he was in the thrall of Ramsay Snow. The sequence was quick. Turns out the Ironborn have a special ops team, and that having Watchmen with no tongue on board Euron's ship the Silence is a pretty bad idea for security. Yara and Theon have a heartfelt moment where they part ways as Yara shuffles back towards the Iron Islands, with a promise that maybe the Ironborn will show up later in the season, and Theon heads north. For Theon, this is the ending of his plot that he had last season, and maybe the start of a new one, as he is going back to Winterfell to rejoin what is his spiritual family. Much in the same way as Jon, who struggles with his heritage versus upbringing with RLJ reveal, the Iron Islands and Yar will probably never be home for Theon in the way the Starks and Winterfell are. A fine sequence for catching us up on them, tying up loose ends. It's kind of a bit quick, but moves forwards towards what I hope are more interesting arcs later for both characters. Speaking of the humor from earlier, the arrival of Harry Strickland and the Golden Company in King's Landing is one that has set the community memeing wildly, as Cersei is extremely disappointed that the Golden Company left their signature elephants behind in Essos. Sophie Turner even dropped a picture of herself trolling Lena Headey, dressed as an elephant for the occasion. Harry Strickland was introduced and positioned as sort of a discount stand-in for Jaime. And while Cersei initially rebuffs Euron's advances, she eventually chooses her Jack Sparrow over Commodore Norrington. It's a scene that largely sets up the next few for her, showing that Cersei is attempting to move past Jaime, much in the same way she dealt with the deaths of Tommen, Joffrey, and Marcella, which is to say, not much at all. Then we get Bronn, who is presented with an offer by Qyburn to kill Jaime and Tyrion, and a vintage callback from early season Game of Thrones with unnecessary full frontal nudity from sex workers. Overall, I didn't really care much for the action in the South. While we do get some moments of seeing how Cersei is still scheming and playing Euron by pretending not to be pregnant, and Theon and Yara's farewell, there wasn't really a lot here. The Golden Company didn't do much other than arrive and be a meme. We confirm that yet again, Euron is not the Eldritch Apocalypse, and that Yara and Theon will be separating. It did fulfill the goals of a premiere episode and gave us the starting points and primary motivations of each character this season, but not a particularly entertaining way. The lone standout personally was Qyburn, who showed visible discomfort at Cersei saying that the Night King's army breaking through the wall didn't matter, and that while trying to convince Bronn to take the contracts on Jaime and Tyrion's lives, Qyburn revealed a lot more about his backstory and seemed to be more trying to convince himself than Bronn that staying with Cersei was a good idea. So that's something to look forward to. Maybe Qyburn will become more of a character rather than a stand-in for Varys. Moving back towards the north, I detailed a lot of my thoughts in an article I published today on Watchers on the Wall about Jon and Dany and their relationship being doomed. But to summarize, I would say I found myself very enjoying the idea of their relationship being doomed structurally between two unwitting Targaryens. No one wants them together except for Davos, Tyrion, and Varys. Even the initial march into Winterfell was something out of a funeral rather than the armies coming to save their lives. Throughout the episode, every member of the Stark clan took time to remind Jon that he has to value his family over his personal desires, and also kind of question why he gave up his crown, whether he was gaining an ally or a girlfriend. Dany felt the same coldness as well, as no one really seemed to recognize that she was their new queen or really sought her opinion on anything. Overall, this was a fascinating way to take their relationship and reintroduction into Winterfell, and creates real tension of how their new relationship will survive the pressures on it, or will it fall apart in tragedy, like Rhaegar and Lyanna and Robb Stark and T'Lisa before them. We also got the dragon riding scene, which overall I thought was fun. People riding dragons in movies and TVs is never my favorite. The best was probably Dany at the Lutrean battle, and that was still largely focused on Drogon. The more interesting part of that sequence, though, besides Jon once again trying to take a girl into a cave and maybe get busy, is that Tyrion and Varys saw Jon on Dragonback. With their backgrounds as students of history, this kind of creates a narrative time bomb until the two hyper-knowledgeable characters can piece together that since only Valyrians can ride dragons, and Jon was riding a dragon, that perhaps Jon is not Ned Stark's bastard. So even if Jon, Sam, and Bran try and keep this explosive information about him being the secret heir to the Iron Throne, it's very likely that Dany's advisors will figure it out first in the coming episode. And of course, the highlight of the episode for me was Samwell Tarly learning directly from Queen Daenerys that not only are his father and brother dead, but it's Daenerys who ordered it. Jon Bradley really did an incredible job in the scene, as well as Emilia Clarke, and one that really straddles the line of survival instinct and self-destruction we see so much. Sam's heart is visibly broken, even though Dany is giving a fair accounting of what happened and the mercy they were offered. His anger erupts and he storms off before running into Bran, who hopefully points him in the direction of Jon, who must now, at this moment for some reason, be told that he is Aegon Targaryen. As far as we're concerned, in this moment, the most important thing for the survival of humanity is that Dany and Jon maintain their coalition, and yet Sam can't stop himself after Bran's prodding. He storms into the crypts and delivers the news of the deaths of Randall and Dickon before informing Jon that he probably has a better claim to rule than Dany. As I explained in my Watchers article, this is extremely dangerous and reckless by Sam. Such conversations in the past of Westeros have inspired full-scale rebellions among the Targaryens, such as the Dance of the Dragons and the Blackfyre Rebellions. Jon Bradley said in an interview with Joanna Robinson of Vanity Fair that in that moment, Samwell wanted nothing more than to hurt Dany as much as he could, despite his complicated feelings about his older brother and his abusive father. And in doing so, Sam may have doomed humanity into the start of a wedge that breaks apart the Stark and Targaryen alliance. In the fandom, it's a scene that has received criticism for using the reveal of RLJ to move forward the plot. However, on my viewing, I felt it was really a great way to show the practical side of RLJ coming to light. It's not just an internal problem for Jon dealing with how his life was a lie, and struggling with how Ned Stark lived with all this and how he was treated, it's really a problem of succession and power. He has the ability to seize the highest power in the land, and he now has a dragon perhaps as well in Rhaegal. And Sam's impassioned pleas about Dany being a monster for what she did to his family, it may feel like a moral imperative to Jon as well. Practical imperative too, as many of the Northern Lords already want Jon as their king before they learn that he may be the heir to the Iron Throne. Some of the other plots in this episode were Arya on her whirlwind reuniting spree as she reconnected with the Hound in their old fake hatred banter, those two, and her crush Gendry, who has noticed that Arya has grown up quite a bit. The scene we were all waiting for, though, was her reuniting with Jon, and personally I found it satisfying. It kind of felt like many fans were hoping that they would fall back into their old habits of being best friends when they were kids, but they've been through so much since they parted that it makes sense that there's a chasm between them. Much in the same way we saw between King Robert and Ned Stark, who bantered upon seeing each other again, but then really had to grapple with the fact that they are really not the same people they were when they parted. Arya in particular seems very hesitant that Jon learn about her journey into the Faceless Men, and the sheer amount of blood on her hands, almost like she doesn't want to disappoint him. And she took time to make sure to remind Jon that family comes first. In addition, she has fully come around to Team Sansa, calling her the smartest person she's ever met. So, kind of in a reversal of their relationships as kids, where Arya and Sansa hated each other, they have now become closer than Jon and Arya. Maybe the writers attempting to make up for the cluster that was last season's Winterfell plot. And of course, we have the tensions between Jon and Sansa, by proxy from the Northern Lords, who are extremely disappointed that their chosen king tossed aside his crown for another Targaryen monarch, in particular Lord Glover, marched home. Jon and Sansa both make good arguments in their discussion about they really have no chance without Dany and her forces, but it's also a practical nightmare to host the two armies and the two dragons. It's not something they were prepared for. So, much like the time bomb I mentioned earlier with the RLJ reveal, maybe to the general public, they now have the tools to maybe defeat the White Walkers, but they might not have the time. Personally, I was also very excited that Jon and Sansa have learned to have meetings behind closed doors instead of front of the entire council. Way to go, you two. You finally got on board. And there were some other nice moments, like Tyrion and Sansa having their awkward reconnection, Jorah and Samwell seeing each other again, and Missandei and Grey Worm being weirded out by all the Northerners staring at. The big story, though, of the episode, I thought, was the death of Ned Umber and the spiral made of arms and hands left behind in Last Hearth by the Night King. I explored this in much more depth in my video here, which you can click and check out, so I'll save you most of that analysis, but beyond explaining what the symbol actually means, I found the sequence extremely well done. It was dark, it was horrifying, it was bloody, and it served in an episode that was really about human drama and reconnections and concerns, that the death is marching for them all, and it is merciless. What was done to Ned Umber was horrible, the thing of nightmares, and that's kind of what awaiting them if they cannot get all their ducks in a row before the White show up outside Winterfell. Overall, this was an extremely effective sequence for me. It was almost a callback to the book versions of the White Walkers, because we didn't actually see the Night King or the Walkers themselves, only a single White. For most of the books, they are kept off screen, and you really only see glimpses of them, and their Whites coming to attack, and it sort of increases fear of them. And for at least for this episode, they held them back from the screen. It's a really fascinating way that even without it appearing, the Night King really loomed over this entire episode with that sequence. And there was the wonderful, beautiful death artwork, commissioned for HBO by the artist Robert M. Ball, and how while most of the focus is on the human interpersonal drama happening, death looms over them. Overall, I would say I personally very much enjoyed the premiere of Season 8, but it was not my favorite episode of the series, and it probably won't be my favorite episode of the season. Premiere episodes rarely are. However, I felt it accomplished a lot of the tough goals of a premiere into a finer season rather well. They laid out more than enough interesting paths to follow in the coming episodes. They reintroduced a lot of characters, reestablished their relationships, and really set the table for what I hope will be an excellent season. I personally found myself pretty bored throughout most of the King's Landing scenes. The North really stood out. And with that, we are done with episode 1 and moving on to episode 2, which will be premiering tonight on HBO. After the episode, I hope you join me here on my channel where I'll be doing a rapid reaction live stream with Manu or Manucular Bomb from the podcast The Scene of Ice and Fire. Be talking about what we thought about the episode, where we think it's going next, basically a preview of this kind of video. If you enjoy my content and you want to see more, consider checking out my Patreon at patreon.com/joemagician, where you can get access to episodes early, audio files early, custom versions of the slides that I use in my videos, and more. At the higher levels, can even work with me on creating a video of your choice. And with that, I wanted to give thanks to some of my patrons, my brown wizard, Mr. Skillen, my blue wizard, Pandora177, and my archmaesters, Nessie the Questing Beast, June the Healer, the Archmaester of Nothing, Brendan Beefish, Casey, Johan, Nauticast, Sanrixian, Steven Stark, and Lady Shar. It's incredibly gratifying and part of the thing that keeps me making content. Thank you for listening.